Hare Krishna. Thank you all for coming in this midweek, in the midst of your busy lives, in this big city. I think many of you may have to travel half an hour or more to come here. Is it all this? Yeah, I was just in Atlanta, same thing. Huge cities spread out. Thank you also for making this beautiful project. I wasn't aware that such a major project is underway. Presumably this is all under the inspiration of Srila Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj, is that correct? Yeah, so congratulations to you all for continuing in his physical absence, the impetus that he gave rise to. I remember listening, I've listened to many recordings of his lectures, and one point he made which struck a chord with me. He said that one of the occupational hazards of being a guru in ISKCON is a bad back due to sitting on soft vyasasans. But I get around that by not, if it's soft I don't sit on them. So if you're wondering why I'm sitting down here, it's not due to humility, but just because I don't want to have a bad back. I don't have any problem with sitting on big seats, but if they're soft, I don't, because then you get a pain in your back. Anyway, let's talk about something of more import than bad backs. Well, that's also part of... everything comes in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Nowadays, devotees often ask me to speak about Bhakti Siddhanta, and I say, well, that's all we speak about anyway, because if we always speak on Bhakti Siddhanta. It's all, everything we speak is the philosophy of devotional service. So bad backs comes within it. Janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukha doshanu darshanam. Bhakti Siddhanta means to see everything in the light of the philosophical understanding of devotional service. So a bad back means, yeah, it's just part of being in this material world. There are no bad backs in the spiritual world. Or if there are, there may be just to, for some purpose of Krishna's, some purpose of his lila shakti, by which his pastimes are enacted. Anyway, this evening I wanted to speak on a topic that I had intended to speak on in Atlanta, which is where I just came from, but which is relevant to our movement, not only in Atlanta. It has been a subject of discussion for several years. But I want to take it from the other side. Sometimes the topic is the ethnicization or de-ethnicization of ISKCON. In other words, should it be Indianized or not? And I want to take it from a somewhat different angle, that actually India is very important. It's essential to our movement, or rather Indian culture, which is the origin of Indian culture is Krishna and the spiritual world, because Krishna appears in India, Rama appears in India, and the culture that we have received through our acharyas, and specifically through Srila Prabhupada, is based on that culture. It's inseparable from Krishna consciousness, because although Krishna is not an Indian, and we are not Indians, but that culture of kirtan, puja, arati, the very idea of offering food to God, that is Indian culture, and the dress, the food style, and everything about it, the interactions, how people deal with each other according to their position in life, the social hierarchy. It could be called Indian. Actually, it's spiritual, but in this world it's particularly manifested in India. Now, of course, there are many traditional cultures all over the world which have many facets which are similar to those in Indian culture. But specifically, only in India, or particularly in India, is Krishna known as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Actually, deities of Vedic deities have been found all over the world. Ancient Vedic deities have been unearthed all over the world, but this kind of information is forbidden archaeology. It's not publicized. And in places of the world which haven't yet become McDonaldized and Coca-Colaized, where there's still traces of the ancient culture, you'll find all over the world the Krishna consciousness. God brother of mine who lives in Bulgaria sent me some translations of Bulgarian folk songs which were common until the communist era there, and are still known in Bulgarian society, speaking about a young boy who takes out his cows and plays on his flute, who's also the supreme lord of everything, and also lies on an ocean, in a massive form, on an ocean of milk, lying on a snake bed. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? And there are things like that all over the world. But particularly, that culture has been particularly cultivated in the land which we nowadays call India, which it's a political entity, but beyond being a political entity, it is a cultural entity. The concept of Bharata was made as a unified political entity and then again broken up by the British. But the concept of Bharata as a cultural entity is there in Puranas, in the common saying, the Ahimachala Setubandha, from the Himalayas to Setubandha, where the place where in South India where Lord Rama built his bridge to go to Lanka. So that area, and the area where the nine sacred rivers flow, where the land of rishis, of course, that now broken up, the river from which the name India gets the name, the Sindhu River, is no longer a place of rishis and holy baths, because that's gone into Pakistan. But the broader area was there, Afghanistan, all these towns, right up to Tatarstan in Russia, and then on the eastern side that was what is Indochina, Indonesia, that culture was there until recently. Malaya, until recently, that was all Indian culture. The Garuda Airways is the airways of
Indonesia.
Caspian Sea, that's said to be from Kashyap. You know anyone called Kashyap? Your spiritual brother, who I know very well, of course, for many years. So that Indian culture was, but that was that culture was centered in the land which is now known as Bharat. It was a broader area. It's gradually, by the influence of Kali Yuga, becoming smaller. In Kali Yuga, all good things become less. Tatashchanudinam Raja Satyam Shocham Kshamadayab Kalena Balinara Jannangshantayo Balang Smritihi. In Kali Yuga, with the passing of every day, all good things become diminished. Dharma satyam, dharma, how to translate that? Just say dharma, it's easier. Satyam, truthfulness, shocham, cleanliness, kshama, tolerance, satyam, shocham, kshama, daya, this mercy, mercifulness. And then, kalena, balina, aranja, then, ayu, the length of lifespan, bodily strength and mental strength. These all decrease day by day. So the land of India is becoming shrunk. But it is of importance to all devotees of Krishna. We can't deny that. All the holy places, of course now there are so many holy places, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and his followers, even in this cow-killing country of America, of which Texas is particularly cow-killing. Now India is full of cow-killing also. But in these unlikely lands, there are also holy places. But still, however many holy places are established, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's prediction is that every town and village, Priti Vite Achi Jata Nagaradi Gram Sabhatra Prachahoibe Moranam, every town and village of the world, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's glories will be sung, and presumably then the deity will also be established. Wherever the holy name is chanted is a holy place. But still, Vrindavan, Navadvip, Puri, Badrinath, Nathdwar, these all have their special significance, these holy places. So it is of concern to devotees that, for instance, the Yamuna is wholly polluted. It is of concern to the devotees that the government of Uttar Pradesh wants to build a massive highway with a bridge over the Yamuna, and in this way will further destroy the spiritual ambience of Vrindavan. These are issues of concern. Recently a book was published called Breaking India, which shows that it's known, but so much detail the authors have brought out to show how various Christian groups and Muslim groups, they have big plans for converting more and more Hindus to their sectarian faiths. And in this way to break the India as a political body, and to break the cultural unity of Hindus. And that, this is a matter, it should be a matter of concern for devotees in our movement. We may say, well, it's socio-political matters, but definitely in India, which Srila Prabhupada put so much energy into. Srila Prabhupada famously came to the West and established Krishna consciousness, but having done so, he spent most of his time and energy in India, and he brought money from the West to establish projects in India. He repeatedly quoted, Bharata Bhumite Hoila Manusha Janmaja Janmashata Kari Koro Para Upaka, that Indians in particular should preach Krishna consciousness. So and Srila Prabhupada, he was concerned. He kept in touch with the news in India, when the government changed to the Moraji Desai government, what was that? Janasangh. That later split into the BJP and the Janata Dal. But that time was the Janasangh, I believe. I can't. But anyway, the point was, Srila Prabhupada, he took interest because there was supposed to be more interested in Hindu matters. And that later the BJP came out of that. Srila Prabhupada, when Not that Srila Prabhupada was what we'd call a Hindutvavadi, but he was concerned with these matters. This Atal Bihari Vajpayee, he regularly came to our center in Juhu. Of course, the temple was only opened just shortly after Srila Prabhupada left. But he used to come and appreciate, which not so many people did in those days. And he wasn't a very big man at that time, but Srila Prabhupada said, feed him, every time give him prasadam, because in future he'll be a very important man. And of course, later on he became the Prime Minister of India. And he took the step, which was quite a bold step for a politician, of he came forward to inaugurate our temple in Delhi, the ISKCON temple. It was quite a, you know, for a politician to do that, it's like I say, it's quite a bold step. And that attracted international news attention and really showed to the world that our movement is, at least in India, accepted by the highest elite. And he, at the opening, he said, I used to, in the days when I didn't have any proper arrangement for eating even, I used to go to the ISKCON temple and I used to take prasadam very nicely there. So you see, Prabhupada knew. So, and when there was the 1971 attack of Pakistan on India, and a reporter asked Prabhupada that, you know, should the Indian army fight? Should they resist? Because at that time, the influence of Mahatma Gandhi and his ideas were very strong. Now Mahatma Gandhi's ideas have been almost totally eclipsed. But at that time, when I first went to India to stay, I first went in 76, but later I went to stay in 77, and more or less I've been there ever since. Still, there were many people who had Mahatma Gandhi's picture on their altar and said he's an avatar. Nowadays, you won't find anyone. But that idea of ahimsa was his misinterpretation of the Bhagavad Gita, that it's Bhagavad Gita is meant to preach ahimsa, and Nehru rather hypocritically promoted this non-intervention and non-alignment. And although, anyway, I don't want to get too much into politics. So I'm also somewhat aware of it. Srila Prabhupada, I'm making the point that Srila Prabhupada took a lot of interest in what goes on in India because he considered it so important. So the newspaper reporter asked Prabhupada, that, well, should we resist? What do you think? And Prabhupada said, yes, certainly we should resist Pakistan. And Prabhupada said that because we did our Pandal program in Delhi just prior to that, therefore the Indian forces were able to quickly resist and destroy the Pakistani forces. So I'm just making the point that Srila Prabhupada, although he was completely transcendental, he always preached this Bhoma Idyadhi Sa Eva Go Kara. I won't quote the whole verse, but one who thinks of his land of birth as worshipable is like no more intelligent than a cow or an ass. So Srila Prabhupada certainly had no mundane attachment to India because he had no mundane attachment to anything. He was completely attached to Krishna. But he was particularly concerned about India because that is the land into which Krishna personally comes. And that land is mentioned in the Shastra that the demigods, they want to take birth in India because it is the best place for spiritual advancement, for developing Krishna consciousness. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada considered it very important. And we see that in our Krishna consciousness spreading throughout the world, that although at that time in India, when Srila Prabhupada was personally present, hardly any Indians were actually joining our movement. It took them some time to adjust to the fact that Westerners were becoming devotees. They couldn't quite work it out, it seems. But now we see that with Indians spread in throughout most of the world, in many places in the world at least, we can see that they tend to take an interest and they're actually taking up the practices of Krishna consciousness, as we see here today that here in this temple, all the proportion of Indian bodied attendees is significantly more than the proportion of Indians in the city of Houston. It means the Indians are taking more interest because it's the natural culture that they're raised with. So we should be concerned, as I said, with issues like the Yamuna being polluted, with the political situation in India. Not that we may get involved directly in politics, as Baba Ramdev is doing at the present time. Is that coming in the American press?
Oh, yeah.
Is it? Yeah. Is it? I just read the Hindu published in Chennai daily. So I don't know, but how do they represent it? How do they represent? How does the New York Times represent it? Generally, the press in the West is, and everyone, the academia, it's all like anti, at least subtly anti-Indian, and presenting India, everything Indian, as inferior. Like, and the Indians themselves believe it, including all of you. Just like in this book, Breaking India, the authors made the very pertinent comment that in the West, in the media, if there's a riot, they report it like it's an aberration. You know what aberration means? It means a deviation from the norm. That actually Westerners are very civilized, and you know, sometimes there's a riot, it's probably the blacks. But if in India or Africa there's a riot, they present, well, that's just normal for them. That's the kind of tone that they're on. This whole idea that the Westerners went to, they justified it. We're going all over the world to civilize the people, and they're still doing it. We're going in Afghanistan because the women have to wear burqas, and we want them to wear miniskirts, and so. and come to, you know, for our striptease clubs, we need so. They present that we're going there to civilize them. And propaganda is very powerful. Even the Indians believe it. And although India has the actual civilization which Srila Prabhupada wanted to spread all over the world, Indians, they themselves, many of them, they feel ashamed of it. I said to one of my disciples in Gujarat, he's always coming to the temple in pants and you know, like this. So I said to him, at least when you come to the temple, wear a dhoti. So he didn't say anything to me, but later I said, heard that he'd said to someone, I don't want to look like a gwala. Gwala means a cowherd caste. So he presumes himself superior. Actually, we want to be gwala, right? Krishna's the, that's the caste he chooses to appear. Even the whole idea of caste is, it's not an Indian concept, it's a British concept. The Indian concept is Varnashram. So, this book, Breaking India, actually shows so many things, how the Indian psyche has become permeated with ideas invented by Westerners to undermine the whole Indian culture. So, we should be concerned about this as devotees of Krishna. Of course, here in America, there are many other, we could say, more immediate concerns, like bringing Krishna consciousness to the American people. But there are many points of broader culture. Actually, everything. The Krishna consciousness movement is supposed to bring pure spiritual culture to the world, and in this way it covers everything. Krishna covers everything. Sarvam samapnoshi, Arjuna says to Krishna, you cover everything. So Krishna consciousness covers everything. That doesn't mean that we're going to get directly involved in ecological movements and stop the cow slaughter movements. We do that in our... Srila Prabhupada wanted to do all these things, but within the scope of Krishna consciousness. Yes, we have our protect the cow movements. We have our farm communities, our ecological movement, farm is farm communities. So we do that all within the scope of Krishna consciousness. But at the same time, we definitely we sympathize with, and we see it as a positive sign that people are becoming vegetarians. They are accepting the concept of reincarnation. They are perceiving the cheating of governments. These are things that Srila Prabhupada spoke about. So if people start to take up these principles, then that means that maybe indirectly that the message that Srila Prabhupada is preaching is having an effect. And it is actually in many ways. I was on a plane recently going from Delhi to London, and there was an elderly English Sikh woman preaching to the young man who had just spent a few months in India, who was sitting next to me, and she was sitting on the next seat the other way. Later she fell asleep and I preached him, and he forgot everything she said. But I just noticed in their conversation they were using terms like spiritual master, pure devotee. These are all terms coming from Srila Prabhupada's books. So in many ways, Srila, that we may not even recognize that Srila Prabhupada's books and his movement are having a deep effect on the culture all over the world. There was something else I saw a few years ago on a newspaper. There was a photo caption and something about the Chechena people. They're traditionally Chechen, I guess they're called that, traditionally considered rascals. And that usage of the word rascals is Prabhupada's usage. Because prior to that, the word, well, it was an anachronistic usage, which has again become current, because the word rascal in modern English had come to mean not such a bad person. It's almost like fun. How can you say? Mischievous, something like that, yeah. But in the former usage, which again become current, it seems due to Prabhupada's usage of it, it means someone who's seriously misbehaved. So like that. And as preachers of Krishna consciousness, we should also be cognizant of these trends. And give people the full holistic spiritual dimension on them all. What is the solution to all the ecological problems? Become Krishna conscious. What is the solution to cow slaughter? Become Krishna conscious. How to increase vegetarianism? Become Krishna conscious. All these things will everything will come automatically with Krishna consciousness. So, we should be aware of this and of all these issues as we present Krishna consciousness as the solution to all world problems. But as Srila Prabhupada was, devotees of Krishna all over the world should also have concern for the spiritual and even social health or even political health of India. You may say, well, what can we do about it? Well, at least concern should be there, and to support the preaching efforts in India. Srila Prabhupada himself put so much emphasis on that. That may be done by, you may think I'm going to end this up with a pitch for building a, you know, give me some money. But actually I'm not, I'm talking on this on a philosophical level. Srila Prabhupada also wanted very much that devotees from the West would go and spend time in India, at least to visit Mayapur and Vrindavan. So when they go, they can chant and dance, and the Indian people will also take note of that. It's very, even today, Srila Prabhupada wanted 500 devotees from the West to come and have residence permits in India. So he wanted very much that devotees from the West would come and preach and at least visit, and in this way become, Srila Prabhupada said, that by visiting Mayapur and bathing in the Ganga and performing kirtan with devotees in Mayapur, they would become purified from the effect of preaching in the sinful West, and then they could go again back to preach. Those who are from India, and they, when they visit India, they should also preach Krishna consciousness in whatever way they can. They can speak to whoever they can, because Indians in India tend to respect those who have gone to America, because they have regard for the West, they think, because they're brainwashed by bogus propaganda, they think everything in the West is better. And anyone who's gone to the West, they must be a big man. So that can be used for preaching also. When you go, don't just visit relations and say hello to them. Give them Prabhupada's books. Tell them about the importance of human life. In this way, contribute to the Krishna conscious movement in India. You see, Western devotees, they may not all be able to go and spend considerable time there. If they can, that's very good. But even for the short time they're there, they should visit from time to time the holy places. But if they can go and at least dance and chant in the streets, and programs, and that will have a tremendous impression. I first went to Bangladesh in 1979. That's a Muslim dominated country, as you know. There are many Hindus there also. It's the second largest Hindu population in the world after India. And one Hindu social worker, shortly after he went there, one Hindu social worker told us that by our going around and doing programs, Western body devotees, he said that the tendency for the Hindus to convert to Christianity, wherever you go, that completely stops. I think the Christians have more or less given up in Bangladesh now, because our movement there has become very strong, maybe more than in any other country. Our movement is very well accepted among the Hindus, and even the Muslims are respectful and appreciative. They're actually very religious people. You won't find an atheist in the whole country. So, that effect is also there in India, that actually, we don't want, although we're not Hindu, we're not promoting Hinduism per se, but it is better if people are Hindus than Muslims, in as much as they'll be more open to and respectful of Krishna, Bhagavad Gita, whereas when they become Christians, especially in India, they become very offensive actually, and it becomes very difficult to preach Krishna consciousness to them. Now, on the other hand, here in the West, while we do want to introduce, now let me make another point first, that this is also another kind of culture, you can say. So, Srila Prabhupada sometimes spoke of cultural conquests. He preached philosophically, but he also spoke of, it's not only philosophy, it's a whole way of life, or rather the philosophy is integrally connected with the practices. So in many ways the Krishna consciousness movement appears to be an Indian movement. Definitely mridanga, kartals, chanting the names of Krishna, wearing this kind of clothing is seen as Indian, although it's not, in the higher sense, it's not Indian, it's Krishna's culture. You have that here in Houston, right? Krishna culture? Yeah. So that we want to present, that real Krishna culture is Krishna. Krishna and Rama, not Sai Baba or Baba Ramdev, although actually if you see his demands, they're all pretty good actually. But the idea to that just overnight you'll rip corruption out of the country is not possible. Actually, if you try to stop all the corruption immediately, the whole economy would probably collapse. Because it runs on black money, right? But some of the real solution is for people to become Krishna conscious. Otherwise, corruption and exploitation must go on. But some of the things he says are good. One of his demands is that education be and governance be conducted on traditional Indian rather than Western systems. But it can't be done overnight, though, because where are the teachers to teach? Even if you are to do that, where are the teachers to teach? You have to re-educate everyone in the country, including all the teachers, and make people amenable to that. And much of the population of India doesn't agree with that. So it's, you can't just change it overnight. Although the idea is good. Everything he says is good, pretty much. Although he says to demonetize the 500 and 1,000 rupee notes, but Prabhupada had a better idea altogether. Stop using paper money. Actually, if you stop using paper money, then the corruption will, to a large extent, stop also. Because paper money breeds corruption. I won't get into that, but Srila Prabhupada explained that. So, it is Indian culture in one sense. But some devotees here in America, particularly, and have promoted an idea which has become, it's entered the fabric of our movement, that Krishna consciousness is a science, it's not an ethnic religion. So we should de-ethnicize it. But that argument has some validity. We don't want to promote this as, although in one sense it's Indian, we don't want to present it as just Indian, as if it's just some ethnic culture, like some, Haitian voodoo, every area has its own ethnic culture, Tibetan Buddhism, but rather this is the science of the absolute truth, but it is intricately and intimately linked with Indian culture, and we should present for this reason the what appears to be Indian. There are so many trappings of that. Although, as Srila Prabhupada said, you can become Krishna conscious in a suit and tie. But at the same time, we don't want the pujaris on the altar wearing a suit and tie. There are certain facets of the culture which are best preserved. If they're not preserved, then much of the practice of Krishna consciousness, or that which is pleasing to Krishna, will be lost. For instance, if we only offer pizza and ice cream to Krishna, then I don't know. He might run back to Vrindavan and get something from his mother that he likes to eat. He has his own preferences, and pizza, we don't find that mentioned in Shastra. We find shukta shakadi bhaji Nalita Kushmanda, Dali Dalna Dugda Tumbi Dadhi Mochakanda. These, what you might call traditionally Indian preparations. And so that Indian culture, we can say that traditional Indian culture, it is significantly superior to the modern American way of life. I don't think we should give it too much credit by calling it a culture, anti-culture, or decultured, you could say. There's a serious lack of culture, or as Srila Prabhupada said, dog and cat way of life. On the other hand, we don't want to, I think this is the point, the important point we can gain from this de-ethnicizing argument. We don't want to alienate people by presenting it as something just for Indians, which that can be a problem also, because so I'm told, I was told in at least one devotional community in America that there are three distinct groups of devotees. There's the Indians, the blacks, and the whites, and they're all different, and they don't interact with each other. Now, Srila Prabhupada said about the black, Afro-Americans or whatever, they always keep on changing the word, so I grew up with blacks, and I'll say that with no, you know, derogatory or pejorative overtones. Srila Prabhupada, he authorized that they could, a group of black devotees could open their own temple, because he said birds of a feather flock together. They have their own subculture. So Srila Prabhupada wasn't against that, as long as, you know, everyone cooperates together. But at the same time, we have to be careful not to separate, become so separate, or that devotees are not all together. I mean, that's the whole idea, isn't it? That everyone should come together in Krishna consciousness. Now, since Srila Prabhupada passed away from this world, there has been there's been a significant number of Indians moving outside India. Previously, there were just a few in America, Canada, in England. Actually, there were quite a few moved to England from Africa when Prabhupada was present. But they hadn't. Now they're socially prominent groups. They came without the Idi Amin, who expelled them from Uganda. He was kind enough not to kill them all, but he took even the nose rings out of the women, every piece of gold, and he left them with their skins and their saris and just the clothing on their back, literally. No one was allowed to bring anything. So they weren't socially prominent at the time, but they've come up now, and they are socially a very forward group, you would say, to use Indian terminology. They've become, due to business acumen and diligence, they've become an important community in England. So the Indian Hindu community, I'm especially speaking of, has become widespread, and South Indians, many have come, especially with the IT revolution, and they've become, although numerically quite small, quite a respected community in the West due to their performing at above average in business and IT and fields requiring some education, intelligence, and in this way becoming a socially forward community. Generally, income level is significantly higher than that of the average American. So, and also for their family values and general decency, you could say you won't find them out on the streets drunk on Saturday nights. So some respect is there. So those who are coming to Krishna consciousness, they can preach Krishna consciousness here in the West, and they have a platform to do so, in as much as Western people or non-Indian, non-Hindu Americans, they have some respect now for Indians. But the trick is how to bring people to Krishna consciousness in a manner that they can feel comfortable, that they're not just joining an ethnic group, or that they have to immediately overnight completely change their culture. And again, for that it may require some separate space or some separate kind of preaching to them. I know in Hong Kong, which is, you all know, that was the preaching that was developed to a large extent again by Tamal Krishna Goswami. I don't know if they still do, but previously they used to have separate Sunday programs for the Indian and for the Chinese people. And in Zurich, where there are many Sri Lankan Tamils, they have two Sunday programs, one in Tamil and one in German or English or whatever. When I go, I speak in English. Most people understand English also. So there may be like that, some separate consideration. Mahatattva Prabhu here for the last several years. How many years have you been in San Diego?
6, 7 almost.
Almost 7 years. Has concentrated on preaching to student age Western Americans with the aim of bringing them in to serious commitment to Krishna consciousness in the Brahmachari ashram. And of course not everyone becomes a Brahmachari, but many take it up seriously. So it requires, he's done that successfully. And how many Brahmacharis do you have?
About
15 Brahmacharis. So you may think, well, that's, if we go among the Indians, so many more will come. Well, that's true, but then why only to the Indians? The non-Indians should come also. We could say it's relatively easier to bring in people of Indian background, because they feel culturally an attraction to Krishna consciousness. But then Krishna consciousness is not meant only for the Indians, so it's definitely not so easy to bring in people from a non-Indian background or non-Hindu background. But that's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement is meant for everyone. So exactly how to, at which level of cultural acclimatization, how far? Well, that may be how much we demand or expect people to take up what the cultural aspects that may be seen as Indian. Well, different preachers, they may do so at different levels. Some advocate that, well, there's absolutely no need at all. Don't even mention it, that you need a dhoti or sari or something like that. I'm more on the other side, especially in India. That why give up? If you're going to take up this culture, why not take it up fully? But for instance, wearing dhoti or sari that helps us to although the identification of a devotee of Krishna is not dependent on dress, but it also helps us to feel that we are part of that role, that we are part of Krishna's family. So, because that's the kind of clothing that Krishna and his associates wear. So I'm more for that. And certainly in kirtan, kirtan means for Krishna's pleasure. It's music, but it's not for our pleasure. So better keep it traditional. And Krishna is the source of everything. And if he wanted, he could also, in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could have had electric guitars in his sankirtan, but he didn't. He had madangas and kartals and this jaja, this wampus we call it in English. Although it doesn't have to be womped, it can be played like this also. And this ghanta, gong. So these are the instruments which are pleasing to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So considering that, everything should be done. Krishna te akhila cheshta. Everything should be done for Krishna's sake. Therefore, I try to promote that we should come to this level as far as possible. Everyone should come to the level of doing everything in a manner that is pleasing to Krishna, because that is bhakti. Although in a beginning stage, especially, people, they may not understand this principle, so we may be more lenient. So there's some general principles. How they are applied, we have to see. That requires expert preaching. Every one who preaches, they're given intelligence by Krishna. How to deal with different, every individual is different. There are no, although we say Indian, black, white, and all this, there are no, it's not that any one person is the same. There may be different cultural groups, but apart from dealing with groups, we have to deal with every single individual. But the point that I'm making here is that yes, we should be concerned with Indian culture, and part of our preaching, there's some more research could be done on that, is as I was speaking in Bulgaria and all over the world, the Vedic culture was spread, as Srila Prabhupada writes, or actually Bhagavatam says that Parikshit Maharaj, he ruled over the land, all the land bordered by the seas, that means the whole world. So the Vedic culture was there everywhere. So that could be a point of research to show that how in different parts of the world the original culture was Vedic, and how this is the superior culture which everyone can benefit from. We're not trying to make people Indian per se, Jai Hind or Garv Se Kaho Hum Hindu Hai, or you know, that's here also in America. VHP saying, Garv Se Kaho Hum, say it with pride, we are Hindus. But that's not our preaching. Our preaching is everyone should serve Krishna, come to Krishna's lotus feet, surrender to Krishna. But that is intimately linked with what is nowadays seen as Indian culture. What exactly the Indian culture is, we have to separate the real from the unreal, just like we don't want to spread Bollywood films all over the world. Bollywood is Indian films, Hindi films specifically. I mean, there are also Tamil films, Telugu films, Bengali films. And Sai Baba, you know, that's, we definitely don't want to spread that at all. But the original culture by which Srila Prabhupada wanted to bring in a revolution, that no need for all these big cities and all these live simply on the land. Well, how are we going to do that? We don't have the culture. Then the culture should be the Vedic culture. So it's a big task. Srila Prabhupada said that I wanted to establish Varnashram Dharma. 50% of my work isn't done. You see what Prabhupada did? That was a miracle what Prabhupada did. So it's a big task. But it is a task given to all his followers. So we should not forget that or minimize that. Hare Krishna. That's all I'll say now, unless there are questions or comments. Is this building sloping? It appears to be sloping slightly this way. Is it? Is that? Is it? Does anyone know? Do you have any structural engineers here? There was a BTG article years ago said that in Houston it's not only the roof that's sliding, because there's some stadium here with a sliding roof. Mm-hmm. Is it? So maybe this is sliding down also. Yeah, you have a... Someone has a question?
Wait, it looks like
she's... Yeah, okay. Do we have an extension mic, cordless mic?
I think I can speak
louder. Oh, yeah, you can. Good. It's good acoustics, well designed.
In support of the things you said about how Indians' minds have been corrupted. I live in India.
You live in India?
Yes.
Where do you live, Mataji?
In Vrindavan.
You live in Vrindavan?
Yes. When you speak...
When did you first go to Vrindavan?
In 1986.
86, okay. I first went in 76. What a difference between now and now and then. It's... Yeah.
The way Indians have been corrupted, when you speak to educated Indians, I always have to correct them, because when they speak about deities, they say idols.
Yeah, and there's another point. They say, they don't say deities, they say idols. That's another British idea. The Indian word is murti, but the archa vigraha is a very good word, good term. The general term would be used as murti. But the British gave the English translation of this as idol. And so Indian people, they say the idol, because they think they're saying the right word. But the term idol has very strongly pejorative, it is itself a very bad word, because in the Christian tradition there's the whole thou shalt not worship graven images. It's the whole story is there of how Moses went on the mountain and he came back, and Aaron, was it? His brother, half-brother, they were all worshipping a graven image of a calf, and then God became angry and Moses destroyed it. They're very much against idols. The whole Christian culture is very much against idols. The idol means a form made by man that is worshipped. But of course the Indian or the archa vigraha is not a man-made image as such. It is, the form is made according to descriptions in Shastra, and then the Lord agrees to appear as that form on the invitation of the devotee according to particular. So that's one example, that the word idol is used, and Indians, even without knowing it, the offensive concept comes with that, which is also promoted by Mayavad. The idea that was, it is not really God, but because so many people pray and then it gets some potency which reflects back, and you know, so many strange ideas. Yes, please. Oh, that's a big thing they make about the widows in Vrindavan, yeah.
And they said the Hindi word for widow is Rendi, which is the word for prostitute. It was right on the front page of the New York Times.
Well, That's not true.
That actually came from an Indian movie.
The point is there that there's the West is extremely condescending and patronizing about India, like we have to go there and solve their social problems, which mean it's actually this book Breaking India makes a very good study of this, that in the name of helping and doing humanitarian work, they come in and they take over the economy and they control the politics, and in any small country in the world, maybe in China or somewhere previously, but it's you can't remain as a leader of the nation unless you're pro-American. They'll have you deposed, or they'll incite a revolution. So this is all, it's all part of the this demeaning of Indian culture is all meant for breaking the spirit of the people and bringing in McDonald's culture. That's what it's for. The fact that, you know, they say the women in India are so, they're in such a bad condition. Well, most women in India, actually now the culture's changed very in the last 10 years very badly. This idea of empowering women, they already have the power which men will never have, which is to have children. That's the role that God's nature gave them. But still today, we can say, most Indian women, they're married, they're happily married, despite all the burning brides propaganda. They don't get divorced 4 or 5 times in their life. So isn't that better than in America? There's real feminism is there in that they have feminine roles. They're respected for that. Whereas here in America, the girls at age maybe 12 or 13 average, they start off with their first of their many sexual partners throughout their lives. There's so many abortions and there's no decency. There's nothing to... They walk around. In this summer season, you'll see them walking on around with very short shorts. And it's just considered normal. So, I discussed many of these points in one of my books called Glimpses of Traditional Indian Life. I think we'll finish there now. Still some questions? Okay, yes, please.
Just on the same line of idol and worldly difference, please clarify for me when we talk of mythology.
Mythology, I was just thinking there's another term, mythology. That's another, they talk about Hindu mythology. Myth comes from the term mithya, which means false. And so Indians talk about Hindu mythology to refer to the Puranas and the Shastra, but it's not at all mythology. It's fact.
So how could you refute the argument when our own Indians...
They use these terms. Well, that's what preaching is about, right? We have to re-educate people. The whole education system all over the world is all bogus. It's just for making... The actual education system in India is, or the Vedic system, is meant first of all for character building. Srila Prabhupada said that's the main point. And to give people knowledge of the purpose of life. Whereas the modern education system is just to make you a slave of a system and of a mindset which causes you to fall into lower species of life. And even in this life, to lead a completely insipid, meaningless, frustrated struggle of a life. So, that was another of Prabhupada's ideas. We should have our own education system. I'm completely against this modern idea in ISKCON. Our schools should be teach the government syllabus and have a little kirtan once a day. This is, it's not going to help people. The whole education and the whole mentality that goes with it is just to make people into shudras and less than. Actually, to call people shudras is a compliment, because Vedic shudras, they were following dharma, but the people are shudras in as much as they can only think of surviving if they have a job. So that's it's like a dog. You have to have a master, otherwise you can't exist, you can't live. Shpavriti, the livelihood of a dog. So, yes.
The Vaishnava Upacharas, how we conduct ourselves.
The Vaishnava?
Upacharas, how we conduct ourselves.
Upacharas?
Prachar.
How can we dovetail?
That's true, as you started out, you were saying the root of a lot of the Hindu culture comes from Krishna, comes from the Vaishnava Siddhanta, etc.
Yeah.
Right? And many parts of the culture are derivatives from that. So how does that get separated or upgraded to actual Vaishnava Siddhanta? So without the movement becoming...
With Siddhanta and Acharan, philosophical understanding and behavior are intimately related. They're not separate. So what, can you be more specific? I don't understand what your question is.
Many of the natural conduct in Hindu society has its base in the Christian philosophy.
Yeah, the conduct is the same conduct as Krishna followed.
So
and Rama followed.
How does that get separated for the Indian-born members of our movement, where they rise above just what they perceive as their own culture to the devotees who rise up to the platform of Vaishnava?
How do you get Indians who are following this culture to become not just Hindus but Vaishnavas? Is that the point? Well, one thing I'm seeing is that many Indians nowadays, they don't know anything about their traditional culture. Even though it's still, many of the points of it, they don't, that even a generation ago presented, they still, some things are there, few things are there, some reverence for sadhus, something for elders in general, some points are still there. Still most Indians believe in getting married. I mean, that's a very basic thing. How to make them, bring them to the Vaishnava position? Preach. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We are not these bodies. We are traveling from body to body, suffering, birth and death. We have to understand our eternal position in relation with Krishna. The philosophy is the same, Indian, non-Indian. Yes. The culture without Krishna consciousness is Shrama Eva Hi Kevalam. It's without Krishna, without understanding our relationship with Krishna, then it's all a waste of time. But still, it's a better waste of time than the waste of time without any even slight connection, even indirectly, with Krishna. Yes, please.
It seems that the difference between tradition and culture would be necessary to understand, because someone may be practicing their culture just as a tradition, without, which would mean to me to be without understanding. Whereas culture means the behavior of people according to their beliefs, so they know why they're acting, why they're behaving the way they do.
Yeah, knowledge is required. That's the point, yeah.
That's the big difference.
That word you just used, beliefs, that's a very dangerous word. That's Prabhupada, he wouldn't accept that word. What do you believe in? It is not a belief, it is a fact. So this idea that religion is just something you believe in, but it has no factual basis, this Prabhupada, he didn't like that. The Christians, I saw some books one of our devotees had collection of books, all kinds of books. So I saw on the title of one of the books that there's something about helping new Christian, new believers. They, for the word Christian, they use the word believer. Like the real, the it suggested to me that among Christians, to have blind faith is considered the main quality. I'm a believer. That means that you blindly, without any intelligence, without any consideration, you blindly believe in Jesus, and that's supposed to be a good quality. But Krishna, in Bhagavad Gita, he convinced Arjuna why he should act as he did. He didn't say, look, believe in me or I'm going to chuck you into hell. He said, understand. Shrinu me paramam vacha. Again and again he tells Arjuna, listen, hear, understand. So I just caught that word. Don't mind. Yes.
You see, if I feel like Bhaktivinoda Thakur was an interesting example of someone who was in the Indian Vedic culture and as a young man was very interested in other things, he studied some Christian teachers.
Well, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it wasn't so much that he was interested in other things, but he studied these other teachers, but he was actually raised with a British style education, which was the English education was overtly British oriented, with the idea, and all young men of his age were raised in that educational system, were raised with the understanding, very clearly stated, that Indian culture is backward, and the British European, which specifically, most importantly, British culture is superior. So he was raised with that understanding. Yeah.
He studied all that in various movements, like the Brahma Samaj, and he became a wonderful Vaishnava. It seemed like a good example.
He became a Vaishnava, yeah. Of course, we understand that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is an eternal Vaishnava. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, yeah. Much about Bhaktivinoda Thakur is misunderstood and misrepresented also. That book of Shukavak is, that needs refuting. He was raised in the... That brings up another important point, that when people from Hindu backgrounds take to the pure devotional service preached by Srila Prabhupada in the line of Bhaktisiddhanta, Bhaktivinoda, Rupa Goswami, they have to be clearly educated, that they really make the transition from being a Hindu to a pure devotee of Krishna. That's also important, because anyone who maintains sympathy for Mayavad, which is all-pervading in Hindu culture, almost all-pervading, then they're not going to... That in itself is a serious contamination. And if they maintain attachment to any part of any material culture, modern Indian culture is very much... It's bedeviled with this idea of becoming a success, which is completely alien to traditional Indian culture. It's a completely Western idea of becoming a success. It's opposed to dharma. In dharma, one is supposed to perform one's duty as well, take training and perform it very well. And the dharmic society is a cooperative society. The society based on success is a competitive society in which everyone becomes more and more concerned simply with themselves. They don't care for their parents or even their spouse or their children or anyone else, and it just becomes more and more impersonal. So there are many faults with the modern Indian culture. So clear preaching and understanding is required. I'm going to finish now, don't mind, because it is, I think, is it? It's later. Many of you have distance to go.